Dr. Eileen Marty joins us now, member of the World Health Organization Advisory Group on Mass Gatherings and Vaccine Clinic Commander at FIU. Dr. Marty, I heard you on public radio in Miami last week, and I must confess I was a little jealous when I heard you. How you doing?
Good. How have you been, Bob?
Oh, I'm good, and I need to ask you about a couple of headlines. First of all, Moderna said yesterday its vaccine, authorized only for use in adults, was very effective in 12 to 17-year-olds. So they are going to apply to the FDA for authorization to use the vaccine in adolescents. Do you foresee any problem with the approval process?
No, I actually don't. I think that Moderna has demonstrated itself to be a very safe vaccine. Its new study in the younger population also confirms that safety factor, and the efficacy is excellent. So,
Also in the news, we've heard various theories about the origins of COVID-19. Where do you stand on that? Do you have any ideas?
So, yeah, there's been a lot of talk. And in fact, there's a group of government and pre-government, post-government individuals that I've been in communication that have been exploring this question for really for a year now, trying to figure out whether or not, this originated in a lab, whether it was done deliberately or not. I don't know if you know, Bob, but once upon a time, that was one of my jobs, to actually try and, resolve why something happened back in my days at Fort Detrick. Anyway, this is a very challenging question, and it's challenging in part because we haven't yet identified a clear link from a specific animal that led to the outbreak, right? So that, because there isn't that clear link and an obvious natural source, it leads people to the speculation of what happened. What happened in Wuhan? When did it happen? And there's several things that people consider. For example, China does have a history of secrecy about its biological research in some of these types of sites. There's some data that suggests, in fact, I remember back more than 20 years ago, information coming out of China of how they could make an influenza virus that was more, that had what we call gain of function, more likely to spread, et cetera. So there's some questions about what they might have been doing, and the virus that is the most closely related from the bat that has been found, which has like 96% homology, is in fact the closest relative. But when we say it's the closest relative to the SARS-CoV-2, we're still talking much difference. There's still a very, very considerable difference, many ancestors in between. So there's that. On the other hand, looking at the entire picture, Bob, if you look at the genome of the actual virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and now we have hundreds of thousands of samples, obviously, millions of samples that have been sequenced even, we don't see those characteristic changes that we tend to see if it's been manipulated by a human, right? So we don't see that. That doesn't exclude the possibility that there may have been a lab accident, that somebody may have been infected with something, And one of the reports very early on last year was very well done, showing again that one of the more probable things that could have happened, because this is a virus that does mutate and does recombine, and it is something that that we've been worrying about causing a massive outbreak since 2007, right? That even it is theoretically possible that somebody who had a mild version, a mild infection at the lab, didn't know it, you know, and then it spread, but it may have spread years before and then modified itself to the point that it became what it is now. Mm. Because that's one of the things that it could have gotten to be this bad in humans, and that we are the species in which it originated, right? We are the species in which it changed over time to be what it is.
Very interesting stuff. And this is all important because there's going to be another pandemic someday, and we need this information, don't we?
That's exactly right. That's the bottom line, is we need to know where this came from to prevent another similar event. And if it were actually on purpose, that's one of the key things you want to know, because how are they doing it and how can we keep them from doing it in the future,
right?
Mm-hmm. But I really doubt that. I really do think it's a natural event, but we still need to understand how that happens, because the better we understand these things, you know, that's how we can contain stuff.
Sure. Have you had a chance to review this new study that's in the news today, a large study that suggests COVID-19 antibodies remain at least 10 months after an infection?
Right. The study done by LabCorp that's in The Lancet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's actually a very interesting study, because they looked at several antibodies, right? They looked more specifically at antibodies to two of the more prevalent proteins, the more noticeable proteins that we make good antibodies to. And one of the things that's interesting about the study is that antibodies against the N, which the nucleocapsid, you know, which is an important protein of the virus, don't seem to last that long relative to antibodies that we make against the S antigen, which is that spike that is a really, you know, that's the thing that we made the vaccines against. So if you have a vaccine, right, then you have antibodies to the spike, and that's really important, right? Because the spike is the main way in which the virus gets into our bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this study, which is about people who were sick, says that as much as 300 days after having had the infection, they're still detecting antibodies to the spike. And that's incredibly encouraging. Now, what they didn't break down, and it would have been really nice if they did, is if we could figure out exactly what part of the spike they're attacking. So what you really need to know is, are they making antibodies to that little motif that we call that's inside the receptor binding domain, that if you have antibodies to that and that's effective, that's when you really know you're not going to get sick and the virus can't really effectively get into your body.
Dr. Eileen Marty, always with great information for us, professor at Florida International University. Do me a favor, Dr. Marty, next time you're on Florida Public Radio there, say you're appearing through the courtesy of the Bob Surratt program at WGN Chicago.
Okay.
We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, as always.
Thank you.